Have you or anyone you know ever had Lyme disease? Wisconsin is considered one of the hot spots for this tick-borne illness, considered one of the fastest spreading infectious diseases in the country today, with an estimated 200,000 new cases each year. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, July the 2nd. We hear that Lyme disease is easily treated with antibiotics, especially if it's caught early, and that it's easily detected after we're warned with a bullseye rash around the tick bite. But we will hear from a guest this hour who says it's really not that simple. She and her entire family, for that matter, came down with Lyme disease, and getting the correct diagnosis and treatment was a battle that continues today. We will welcome your questions and maybe even your own experiences about Lyme disease at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Pamela Weintraub. She is senior editor at Discover Magazine. She has written many articles for many national magazines, including Omni and Psychology Today. She is the author of Cure Unknown, Inside the Lyme Epidemic, a book that covers the history and the progression and all of the intense battles over Lyme disease. And she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you still suffer from Lyme disease today?
Well, actually, I don't. I am the one person in my family who is better. After aggressive treatment for a few years, I did get well.
You did? Okay. But you, the rest of your family did not?
Well, they're all much better than they were, but they have suffer various various sequelae and also continued illness, and a couple of them have gotten reinfected. So,
yeah.
Whereas they did get better, they got sick again.
Yeah, and what we're talking about in terms of getting sick, Lyme disease is not just achy joints. It was a whole lot more than that for you and your family.
Well, Lyme disease is a neurological disease as well as a joint disease. In fact, it's a multisystemic disease, so it can cause a wide variety of problems depending upon where the infection roosts.
Yeah. Talk about how this happened to you and your family. You moved to suburban New York?
Well, we moved to Chappaqua, which is a suburb north of New York City, and we lived in a house that was bordered by a spruce forest that was home to deer and obviously field mice and ticks and the spirochetes they contain and the whole ecosystem. And we were exposed many, many times over the course of time that we lived there. And so we eventually all got infected.
Yeah, and you didn't know, though, that you were infected until when?
Well, it took 7 years for us to get diagnosed. And, of course, in the beginning, we weren't all that sick. You know, we had my older son, who was the sickest of us, started by having a lot of joint pains. And the doctor said, well, these are growing pains. Eventually, he became exhausted, and this was looked at as fatigue. And it wasn't until the year 2000 when he had a fully, floridly positive test for Lyme disease that we were finally able to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and he, correct me if I'm wrong, no bullseye rashes here.
He actually did have a rash,
but
and that was another problem.
Mm-hmm.
Although many people do not have a rash. Perhaps 50% of patients ever will get or see a rash. He did have a rash. It wasn't a circle, it wasn't an oval, it wasn't a bullseye, it was a spreading, mottled red and white rash over his torso, and that is a classic erythema migrans rash. But the doctors told us if it wasn't a bullseye, it wasn't Lyme disease.
Yeah. The rest of you did not have rashes?
The rest of us never saw a rash. My younger son, when he got reinfected about a year ago, actually had a classic bullseye.
Mm-hmm. So why is it that it took, I mean, there's been a lot of attention, at least in Wisconsin, where we're considered one of the hot spots, there's been a lot of attention paid to Lyme disease, and we're told to, you know, try to watch out for ticks and watch out for these bullseye rashes and all that. Why did it take so long for you and your family to get a diagnosis and on a road to treatment anyway?
Despite the attention given to Lyme disease, there's a very restrictive definition that surrounds it. And as you go from doctor to doctor, if you don't meet the chapter and verse of this definition, which comes from the Infectious Diseases Society of America, then you will be told by many doctors, not all, but by many, that you don't have Lyme disease. And the sicker you get and the more complicated your illness gets, the less likely you are to fit with it within the strictures of that definition.
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize how controversial Lyme disease and the treatment of Lyme disease was until I did a program. This was a couple of years ago with someone from one of our medical clinics in Wisconsin over what to do to try to prevent and treat Lyme disease. And when he said, well, you know, it's sort of a, you know, this simple test, and if you have it, you get a course of antibiotics, and it's easily treated. And everybody said, no, it's not that simple.
Well, the tests are very, very problematic, and many people who have Lyme disease and who even have evidence for Lyme disease, biological evidence for Lyme disease in other, from other venues, other tests, fail these standard tests. And this is a matter of the peer-reviewed literature, if you look at it. It shouldn't even be controversial that the tests are highly problematic. That's the first thing. And yet doctors defer to them. That this lets a whole group of people pass through that early stage of the disease when they could be easily treated and cured. They become very ill and they develop infections that are disseminated and very entrenched, and they're very hard to treat. And by that, by the time that people finally realize what it is, it's too late for that easy cure.
Yeah, well, yeah. And that's chronic Lyme disease, then. You're a chronic Lyme disease sufferer if they don't catch it early.
Well, people who go for more than a year do develop what I found that research scientists I've interviewed and also the Lyme doctors who treat these patients call chronic Lyme disease. Of those people that develop this very chronic kind of infection, a certain number of them after the standard treatment simply just don't get well. And there are a host of reasons for that.
Yeah, what are they?
Well, first of all, the Lyme spirochete can hide in niches in the body. There was a recent study out of the University of California, Davis, that showed that the spirochetes are embedded in collagen. They can become dormant. They can become very quiescent and resistant to the antibiotics that are generally used against them. And so this becomes a very difficult issue. People may suppress the infection, but then if they stop the treatment, the infection comes back on them, and it sort of becomes not dormant, and they become symptomatic again.
Yeah, so it's not what I was reading. It sounded like people all over the country who have chronic Lyme disease also have symptoms that are bipolar disease and other things that you wouldn't necessarily associate with Lyme.
Well, Lyme disease is a brain disease. The spirochete gravitates to neural tissue. It lives in the brain, and so therefore it can cause a host of neuropsychiatric disease. Often, most of the time, when these patients are actually treated for Lyme disease, their neuropsychiatric symptoms subside.
Yeah. So the what is the standard course of treatment for someone who has chronic Lyme disease?
Well, if a person becomes a late-stage patient,
yeah,
and crosses over into that chronic group, they find themselves in the wild west of medicine in the realm of contested disease, because this disease is not supposed to exist. And so they find themselves needing to go to what are a very small group of doctors who, in my opinion, have heroically taken on the task of treating these patients, despite the fact that when they do so, they get reported to medical boards, their licenses are put at risk. And it often becomes, there is no one standard treatment for these patients because each one has a different immune system. There may be different co-infections involved. Aside from Lyme disease, there are often other infections like babesiosis, anaplasmosis, that require different treatments and complicate the situation. Mm-hmm. And there are other spirochetes that cause Lyme-like disease but are not the Lyme spirochete Borrelia burgdorferi.
The heroic treatment that you speak of from some brave doctors is putting the patient on long-term antibiotics, which is not accepted by most in the medical community?
That's right. And it is, in truth, of course, it is risky to go on long-term antibiotics. There are a lot of problems with that. If you get IV, your line can be infected. You can develop other antibiotic-resistant infections. So it is a risky thing, but these patients are so debilitated from their Lyme disease.
Yeah, if people like you who, that's how you were successfully treated.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was on treatment for a few years, and I continually relapsed until the fourth year.
And then it finally worked.
Yes, I there was a doctor who explained to me how who helped me get treated in a way that was geared at not relapsing anymore, and it worked, and I got better.
Yeah. So if people like you get better after long-term antibiotic treatment, why isn't this accepted in the rest of the medical community?
Well, as I said, antibiotics themselves are very controversial. We have a situation in which there are so many antibiotic-resistant infections around that truly pose a threat to society. And so doctors are, and they are legitimately worried about the overuse of antibiotics, except when it comes to Lyme patients who are so sick. You know, they shouldn't really be applying that blanket rule. And also, many of these doctors don't believe that the infection is persisting.
Yeah. We're going to take a short pause, and we also open our lines for your questions, maybe even your own experiences with Lyme disease, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Pamela Weintraub. She is the author of the book Cure Unknown, Inside the Lyme Epidemic, a book that talks about her her entire family coming down with Lyme disease. It was not caught early. The effects were devastating, and the book covers the battle over the treatment of chronic Lyme disease sufferers that still exist today. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay with us. Coming up later this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. For the past 50 years, Americans have been warned of the dangers of fat in the diet. After 5, Ben and his guest will discuss dietary fat as a necessary component for good health. Talking with the author of Fat, It's Not What You Think, coming up after 5. We're talking with the author of Cure Unknown, Inside the Lyme Epidemic, Pamela Weintraub. She's a science journalist, a senior editor at Discover magazine, and also someone who has suffered from Lyme disease. Our first caller is Chet in Athens. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I had been bitten Monday with a deer tick, and it, I don't think, was on very long. I was just wondering if your guest would know how long it takes to possibly be infected, and if indeed most deer ticks don't carry the dreaded Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, what can you tell us about that, Pamela?
Well, my opinion is that if you have been bitten by a tick, that you should go and get prophylactic treatment for this. Usually, it takes a while, some people say a day or two, for the tick to transmit infection because the spirochete lives in the midgut. However, the spirochete isn't always in the midgut. Sometimes it is in the mouth parts, and so there have been quite a number of reported cases of shorter attachments causing Lyme disease. It's easy enough to get some prophylactic antibiotic treatment and avoid any grief that might possibly come up the road.
Yeah, are doctors today willing to say, okay, you were bit by a tick, here's some antibiotics?
Well, Infectious Diseases Society of America advises that you get 200 milligrams of doxycycline upon a tick bite. Mm-hmm. I recently interviewed the CDC on this, and they recommend thought that this was possibly too conservative, mm-hmm. and we have that article in Discover magazine. So I would try to find a doctor who would go a little further than that, the 200 milligrams recommended.
When you say the spirochete, is that
cheat? The spirochete is the bacterium that causes Lyme disease. Yeah. It's a spirochete just like syphilis. It's a coiled bacteria.
Yeah. Thank you, Chet, and get to the doc. Our next caller is Alicia in Janesville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm just wondering if the ideas behind the controversy changed over the years. 5 years ago, my son was three at the time and had a positive test for Lyme. He was incredibly sick. He went from being normal to like almost completely lethargic. We took him to the doctors. We're not really sure. They did repeated tests. His liver was swelling, his blood counts were off, he had the arthritis in his joints. We were sent to specialist after specialist and lived for months at the university hospital. It was just a horrifying time in our life. He would wake up screaming in so much pain, literally holding his head and screaming about how bad it hurt. He couldn't leave the house. He would say, "I'm so tired, Mommy, can we go home?" I couldn't grocery shop. We could do nothing with this little baby boy. I just had a newborn at the time, and the doctors kept saying, "Oh, there's so many false positives for Lyme, though. That can't be it." Even though everything my husband and I could find and digest on it was exactly the symptom that this child was showing, even though there was a test that said he had it, they would not treat him. He'd never been on antibiotics his whole life, nothing, never been sick for anything healthy up until this, you know, sudden situation, and they would not just treat him at all, and the saving grace was that a few people in the house got strep throat. So we all started giving him our antibiotics, and I gave it to him for 2 months. Actually, it was about 10 weeks, and he was showing immediate signs of improvement within about 5 days. And we were just like, okay, this obviously has to be it. And I mean, the antibiotics worked, and he's gone on to be healthy and fine, and he's 8 years old now. But I'm thinking, it was almost like, is this a conspiracy theory? This is nuts. Why is it that if he has a positive test that says he has this, I still couldn't get him treated for it? I just don't understand the controversy.
And this was a couple of years ago, you say?
Yes, yeah. This has been five years now.
Yeah, Pamela?
Well, you know what? This is an outrageous story, and yet it's a story that you hear over and over and over again from Lyme patients. It is so tragic. You are so lucky that you treated your child, and yet I might point out that if somebody has done what you've done, and it's discovered, they could be accused of Munchausen's by proxy. And as so many of the parents of Lyme children find themselves, and it is why is there this denial about this disease? I think that part of it is that the fight itself has put the fear of God into ordinary doctors, and they really are very resistant to this diagnosis because it has become such a hotbed of controversy, and the word has gotten out around the mainstream medical community, around some of it, that Lyme disease is is overdiagnosed. And while there are false positives, there may be people who are diagnosed with it who don't have it. This is sort of like taken off. And it's taken on a life of its own. And it's one of the reasons why so many people are missed and are allowed to become chronically sick when they just could have been cured, like your son. And as to what it's like today, it is even worse today. The guidelines from the Infectious Diseases Society of America are even more restrictive than they have been in the past.
Alicia, I'm glad your son's okay now. Rick in Sparta, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I tested positive for Lyme's a couple of years ago, and have been feeling ever since like I have fatigue and joint pain. And I go back into the doctor, and they treat me. I go through my 2 weeks of antibiotics, and you should be all better. Well, they test me again, and they say, well, your Lyme, I forgot what they call it, Lyme.
Antibodies, isn't it?
Well, the test, there's a certain name for the amount of...
The Western blot?
Yes. There's a certain level in Lyme tick, is that what... Or not Lyme tick, but Lyme...
The antibodies against the spirochete you're talking about. The immune response.
That must be it. And I was just wondering about the validity of this test, and because they say I'm borderline now, and that I still test positive, borderline positive, even after the treatment. So I'm just wondering, did I get rid of it?
I would go by how you feel. The test is really basically meaningless, especially after you've been treated. I mean, after you've been treated, you can continue to test positive and not have the disease, or you can test negative and have the disease. You really do need to go by how you feel. There were two NIH studies done over the last few years, by the way, that showed that an extra month of IV Rocephin, not a couple of weeks of oral antibiotic, but an extra month of IV Rocephin in fatigued patients did significantly improve their fatigue without relapse. So I would look into that, and I would get those two studies as a means of supporting further treatment for yourself.
Yeah. And just to clarify with this testing, this testing is telling us that someone was exposed to this bacteria. Isn't that right? Isn't that what the antibodies are telling us?
The tests are very, very problematic. Yeah. I interviewed many people about the test. I interviewed the company that manufactures the test, who told me they found many other patterns of antibodies that are better predictors of Lyme disease than the pattern in this test. I interviewed, I spoke to people who were around in 1994 when the test was changed. There used to be another test, but in this particular test, they removed two antibody markers that are specifically more prevalent in late disease. So a lot of people that have later disease, and maybe they have three bands or four bands, if you looked at these other two that were removed, and they were removed only for statistics, they actually are very pronounced markers of Lyme disease, and nobody denies it. But if you would count those in, you'd actually be positive. You really cannot go by those tests.
Well, why not? After all this time with the discovery of this Lyme disease, so what was that? The late 70s. How come we don't have better tests?
Because these tests are, first of all, these tests that currently exist are primitive. They're based really on 20th century technology that looks for an immune reaction against the spirochete. But this particular disease is very problematic because one of the ways that Lyme disease evades the immune system is by continually changing its outer coat. So it's one way, and then after it's treated or after it interacts with the immune system, it changes to another thing. And so a lot of scientists feel those working with in the 21st century technologies of genomics and proteomics, a lot of them feel that we may not be looking for the right antibody markers, we may not be looking for the right markers for the disease, that that this technology from the past is just too primitive, and yet it's continually touted as the gold standard. There are many people working to try to develop better tests.
Yeah, so I was wondering if there is any hopeful research or anything on the horizon.
Well, especially the work that's coming out of Stony Brook University in New York, where they're actually looking at the entire protein expression and genome of the spirochete and of every strain of the spirochete, and they're comparing it to the human, the genomics and proteomics of the human response. They're trying to get a much more sophisticated and refined measure of exactly what patients might have, and hopefully we will have something like that in years to come, but we don't know.
Amos in Sauk County is with us now. Hi, Amos.
Hi, Joy. I think this discussion of solutions is highly one-sided. The first time I was diagnosed with Lyme, the guy said it was the highest count he'd ever seen in his life, and my entire body was shutting down. My mind went, my joints went, and I was, I don't believe in antibiotics because I think, there's a good reason doctors are warning against overuse of antibiotics, and I finally took the treatment, the 3-week one, the first time, and it was just, amazing. The different, the second day, it was like a different person. And I've had reoccurrence probably 3 times since then. But the second time, I absolutely everything shut down. And the only solution that they had was, well, you need to do intravenous, or you're not going to survive. I mean, this is your only thing you can do. And I had a good friend that did that course of treatment, and she thought she was going to die from it, and she ended up doing alternative stuff with echinacea and diet and exercise. And so I told the doctor, I said, I'm not going to do intravenous. I'm going to change my lifestyle. I'm going to start swimming. I'm going to work out my joint stuff. I'm going to drop sugar. I'm going to eat well and take all this huge, I used to carry around this huge bag of different things like boron and echinacea and all this stuff. And I became extremely healthy. I never was not healthy, but and I'm doing pretty well. I mean, I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
And
so
you're
saying that you haven't had a relapse since you've done this?
I actually did have one. I got bit. I mean, where I live, they're just biting you all the time. And my cats, they're staggering around for a year or whatever, and then they get better. And I've done a lot of research on this, and I'm not convinced that long term, and we're talking real long term, if people have a healthy immune system, they're going to be able to function and do well long term. And when you're talking pumping somebody full of antibiotics long term, you're doing a huge hit on your immune system in general.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be discussed. The other thing I forgot to tell the caller was this whole deer population thing. I mean, we're basically getting Lyme disease because we've got the environment so out of whack that we have tons of deer.
Yeah.
We have no natural predators to get rid of the deer.
I know, and Pamela, you write about that in your book, too.
Right. Well, yeah. I think that a lot of what Amos says is really important and right on. I mean, I do agree completely that that you need to boost your immune system, and antibiotics, in the end, cannot totally kill this infection. You must finish it off by strengthening your immune system. And the only thing I will add is that not everybody is in a position to do that, maybe because of their own natural genetics or because they are so beaten down. But I think, that it is true that that's the other side of it, that you have to really work on strengthening your immune system to finally kick this. I think that's right.
Yeah, and let me follow up on if it sounds like Amos and his friend had no trouble at all getting doctors to want to give them intravenous antibiotic treatment or longer-term treatment. So is it really that big of a problem getting this?
Well, it is. I mean, they may have had a doctor willing to give it to them for a month. I don't know of anybody that just willingly gives months upon months of intravenous treatment with, in a very casual way. It is dangerous, you know, and there are risks involved in it.
Yeah, when you're talking about long-term, you're talking more than a month when some of the chronic sufferers need more than a month.
Yeah, and you know, people have different issues. A lot of there are people that have more than just Lyme disease. They are co-infected with other infections. Their immune system is so beat up that they can't even get to that level of mm-hmm. being able to fight back, like Amos is saying, until they've had more treatment. I believe what he's saying. I believe his story is
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
But it may not be true for everybody.
Yeah, and the deer population and people moving into deer habitat, a big problem, right? I mean,
it's terrible. The mm-hmm. the environment is way out of whack. The deer have exploded. Of course, it's not just deer are not the only species responsible for Lyme disease. It's the mice that are really the reservoirs, and birds carry the ticks and the disease everywhere. But the deer population is just created a huge explosion.
Mm-hmm. Pamela Weintraub, our guest, she's senior editor at Discover Magazine and author of the new book, Cure Unknown, Inside the Lyme Epidemic. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have a question for her, or maybe a story about your own experience with Lyme disease. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen and her guest will examine the possibility of military action against Iran. A recent New Yorker article claims the Bush administration has strengthened covert operations there just days after Israel renewed threats to attack nuclear facilities. That's the topic after 9 o'clock. Back to the phones now for Pamela Weintraub, author of Cure Unknown. Sue in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Hi. I used to be a public health nurse, and when the Lyme disease first came on board, we recommended that everybody who gets a tick, sees the tick, remove it carefully, tape it to a card or a piece of paper, and say who it was that had it and what the date is, to take in to the doctor. I now question maybe it would be better to call the extension office and get an identification, because the deer tick is very, very small, and the other ticks, the ones that people see usually, aren't the carriers of Lyme disease.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it is good to save the tick and get it tested to see if it is infected with Lyme disease. But keep in mind that these ticks do carry other diseases, and so that even if you find it was negative for Lyme disease, it could have babesia, it could have anaplasma, and so you're really not out of the woods. Even though I agree that you're right, and that would be a very good thing to do.
Yeah. It's also, I would suspect, pretty, I don't know, hard, rare for somebody to actually find that deer tick on them, biting them.
People do find it.
Yeah.
I mean, but you have to be really alert, because it's so tiny. You're not expecting something that's the size of the head of a pin and looks like a light breath. Not only is it the size of a freckle, but it is the color of a freckle.
Yeah.
So it is often, and it creates a numbness in your skin so that you can't feel it.
Yeah, little buggers. You did go through, you knew you were moving into tick country or Lyme country when you moved to your home, and you took all sorts of preventive measures, didn't you? And you still got it.
Well, I'll tell you that I don't think that we were as careful as we could have been, because when we read, and it's amazing, because my husband and I were both health and science journalists, and when we moved there, we knew about Lyme disease and we read about it, but everything that we read in the mainstream media and also in the mainstream science journals said it was no big deal, that it was this very specific circumscribed thing. If you got it, it would be found easily and treated easily. There was a debate raging about around Lyme disease at that time, but we would have had to dig much deeper to really be aware of it. We just weren't aware of it. It's amazing that we weren't, but we weren't.
Yeah. Patrick from Hazel Green emails, please discuss the vaccine for Lyme disease and if it is helpful. I had that vaccine 8 years ago.
Well, the vaccine for Lyme disease has been taken off the market amid a firestorm of controversy. The company says that they took it off the market because of lack of demand, which is really true. Nobody would get the vaccine anymore because so many people reported very severe side effects. And there were a lot of problems with that vaccine, which I cover in my book, and some very unusual and disturbing aspects to it that made it really so that people were afraid to get the vaccine. And that people are now working on new vaccines, and hopefully we will up the road get something that is more acceptable to patients and to the marketplace.
Yeah. You know, when you titled the book Cure Unknown, is it because you really, even though you're feeling better now and finally the long-term antibiotics helped you, that you really aren't cured?
Well, I'm not saying I'm not cured. What I really mean to say is there are so many patients who aren't cured, that this is just so complex. There are many, many patients who continually relapse without antibiotics, or whether on antibiotics or not, continue to feel sick after having late diagnosed Lyme disease. Whether you agree that it's a persistent infection or you're calling it some kind of post-Lyme immune syndrome, which a lot of the people in the Infectious Diseases Society of America do, still these people feel very sick. There's no question about it. And what is the cure and treatment for them?
Yeah. Dorothy in Menominee is with us now. Hi, Dorothy. You're on the air. Let me try that again. Dorothy, are you there?
Hello, good morning.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I tuned in late. I had a friend who called me because she knew I had been dealing with this and saw me coming through the last of it. I was only able, despite having tried everything that I could think of when I knew I had Lyme disease, it was not until I had the right lab test with the one Lyme expert, holistic MD in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, actually, in Winona, that got the right test and discovered what all I was dealing with, which was all of the ones you've mentioned, the Babesia, anaplasmosis, and Lyme. And I'm an organic grower with a really healthy lifestyle, but I do live in Lyme country, and the bite that initially got me was in March, where you don't expect ticks, and it was in an unspottable place until it got irritated. And then when I got a wood tick bite several years ago, I didn't realize that wood ticks were a problem. That information wasn't available. And what has finally helped was doing an intense course of doxycycline for 8 weeks and a lot of nutritional supplements, you know, really trying to boost. But one of the things that is unusual is there is a co-infection that only a few people at my Lyme information exchange even knew about, and the doctors I've talked to had never heard of it. This doctor had heard of it, had never seen it. And that's what they're calling Morgellons disease. There's a pattern of co-infection with Lyme disease and people who work with soil and compost. And, of course, I'm a 66-year-old organic grower. Wow. I've been working with compost all my life. So that's, and it's very unknown, and I guess the FBI is trying to figure out what it is. It's a very strange invasive. But the fact that it's, the Lyme is a spirochete, and another one is a rickettsia.
Boy.
Those have that pattern of staying in your system, and Johnny at Celltech in Madison says that it will recur. It's like syphilis or shingles, that it stays in your system, and when you're under stress on the anniversary of the initial incident or when you travel, you will have recurrences. And that has been my experience over the 8 years.
Dorothy, I'm so happy you called. But, boy, this is scary and complicated. Pamela, a reaction?
Well, I would say, you know, just addressing the issue of Morgellons, this is, you know, this remains still a big controversy. And the CDC is looking into it now to try to get to the bottom of what exactly is the story with these patients who report that they have these sort of worm-like entities growing out of their skin, and a lot of doctors have been diagnosing them with delusional parasitosis, and others, including many of the patients, say that they have a real disease. Recently, it's been suggested that it is this bacteria from the soil, but we'll see how it plays out after a lot of our research is done. Yeah. It's still a mystery, I think.
I got an email from someone in New York who wanted you to address, in general, the whole issue of co-infections. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, the Lyme tick contains, you know, not just Borrelia burgdorferi, the Lyme spirochete, but it contains other infections, known and, by the way, unknown. We don't know all of the infections that might be in the tick. The three big ones that people talk about or that have been really studied and really remain not controversial at all are Borrelia burgdorferi Lyme disease, and then Babesia, which is like malaria, and Anaplasmosis, which this caller said was a rickettsia, which is also a very bad disease if you don't treat it. And then there are other suggested diseases. A lot of people now think that there's a Bartonella in the ticks. Other people say there's Mycoplasma in the ticks. There is a tick-borne encephalitis, which is a virus in the ticks. Other scientists have found tularemia in the ticks, which is a terrible disease and quite deadly if you don't treat it. In addition to this, there are different, even within Lyme disease, there are different strains of the spirochete. And so this explains why, in part, why some people get sicker than others and why the tests vary. In addition to all this, there are other ticks. For example, there is the Lone Star tick, which originally was studied just down south or in around Missouri in Texas. But the Lone Star tick has just traveled everywhere now. It's all the way up the East Coast, up to Maine, and it carries another spirochete that is not the Lyme spirochete that causes a disease that is a ringer. Yeah. For Lyme disease, needs to be treated in the same way, but you'll never test positive for it. The scientists at Yale have found a second spirochete in the deer ticks that is not really yet fully identified. They're not sure of its role in disease. So you have a very complicated situation.
You sure do. And Dorothy mentioned that the plain old wood tick also was a problem.
All of these ticks can carry diseases. I don't know that the wood tick carries Lyme disease, but it could certainly carry other diseases. They all do. It's a very, very complicated situation, and that's why it's so disturbing when it's made to sound so simple by some people in the medical mainstream.
Dorothy, thank you so much for calling. I need to move on. We have other callers and running out of time. Pat in La Crescent. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to tell you that my husband was diagnosed 15 years ago in Connecticut. We lived in Westchester, and he had shown a number of symptoms, but the most a difficult one was memory, a short-term memory. He was having trouble with his memory. Finally, after a couple of years of telling our regular doctor this, he said he sent us to a neurologist. And fortunately for us, the neurologist herself had a serious Lyme disease that nobody diagnosed until she'd become quite ill. So she was very sympathetic. She had his he had a brain scan after he was tested, and she said it was a positive test. He was sent for a brain scan, and she showed us the picture of the infection in the brain, and he was treated for 30 days at the hospital with the with intravenous antibiotic, and then oral antibiotics for a long time after that. But when the infection cleared from the brain, we saw another scan, and it was clear. It was just a fascinating kind of thing. After that, he was given 6 hours of psychometric testing, and it was determined that some damage, permanent damage, had been done. His short-term memory is gone, and there are other complications that we're living with now. But he never had an outward sign. He did not have the bullseye. I'd had bullseye and been treated right away 3 times. And there were a lot of people at that time in New York who had not been treated, who had arthritis and all kinds of difficulties before people would take them seriously. Yeah. But I want to say it's a terrible thing, and we're still living with the, we will be living forever with the consequences of this, with the infection having been in the central nervous system.
I'm so sorry for you, Pat. I want to give some time for Pamela to react to your story.
Well, the issue of short-term memory loss is very real. My husband also suffers short-term memory loss, and it's a very... big problem that antibiotics has not really addressed. And I have to say, what you're describing, the situation that you encountered in Westchester County in New York, I think that it's only more so that way now. It's shocking that this disease was discovered and studied so many years ago, and yet still people in the heart of the epidemic with very classic signs and symptoms of the disease, even if they don't have a bullseye, go for so long, for so many months and years, until they finally realize what is the matter.
Yeah. In our final just a minute or two here, what do you want your readers and our listeners to take with them from what you're saying about Lyme disease?
Well, I think the most important thing is to catch this early and to treat Lyme disease, even if you're not 100% sure that it is Lyme disease, even if it doesn't quite meet the classic definition. Because if you wait, as some doctors do, they want to wait until you develop a definite late-stage sign of the disease, like, you know, are your meninges inflamed or are your knees swollen. If you wait until that point, you're really... up a creek.
Yeah, and so, so we still have about 30 seconds. If your doctor, though, is saying, hey, I'm going to wait, what do you do?
Well, I might find another doctor. It's not as if you should, casually treat yourself for something if you're not sure you have it or if it's just really vague. But if you have many of the signs or symptoms of Lyme disease, if you have really good reason to think that you have it, it's really more cautious to have a short-term course of antibiotics than to wait until you get really sick. That medicine won't work anymore.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Pamela Weintraub, author of Cure Unknown, Inside the Lyme Epidemic. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, Rob Ferret, and Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.